welcome to Hebraic Insights in the Gospels. Join us every Sabbath on Zion Road Radio for a look at the life, deeds, and words of Yeshua Messiah and his followers from the Torah-centric Hebraic perspective they were originally lived and written in. Today's program is on Matthew chapter 18, verse 1 through Matthew chapter 19, verse 12. What is God's heart towards those of his children who go astray? How can we apply that to our lives and the way that we treat others? If it's not God's will that one of these little ones should perish, then why do people die? Why do we stumble and go astray? What do we need when we do go astray? And do others need the same from us? Was Messiah saying men couldn't ever divorce their wives, or contradicting the Torah in his answer to the Pharisees' question? What is God's intention regarding marriage? Stay tuned to the end of this program for Eliyahu ben David's insight on these questions and more in Matthew chapter 18, verse 1 through Matthew chapter 19, verse 12. And now, here's today's first scripture portion. Matthew chapter 18. In that hour, the disciples came to Yeshua, saying, "Who then is greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Yeshua called a little child to himself, and set him in their midst, and said, "Most certainly I tell you, unless you turn and become as little children, you will in no way enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whoever, therefore, humbles himself as this little child, the same is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever receives one such little child in my name receives me. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it would be better for him that a huge millstone should be hung around his neck and that he should be sunk into the depths of the sea. Woe to the world because of occasions of stumbling, for it must be that the occasions come. But woe to that person through whom the occasion comes. If your hand or your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off and cast it from you. It is better for you to enter into life maimed or crippled, rather than having two hands or two feet to be cast into the eternal fire. If your eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out and cast it from you. It is better for you to enter into life with one eye rather than having two eyes to be cast into the Gehenna of fire. See that you don't despise one of these little ones. For I tell you that in heaven, their angels always see the face of my Father who is in heaven. For the Son of Man came to save that which was lost. What do you think? If a man has 100 sheep, and one of them goes astray, doesn't he leave the 99, go to the mountains, and seek that which was gone astray? If he finds it, most certainly I tell you, he rejoices over it, more than over the 99 which have not gone astray. Even so, it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. If your brother sins against you, go, show him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have gained back your brother. But if he doesn't listen, take one or two more with you, that at the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word may be established. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the assembly. If he refuses to hear the assembly also, let him be to you as a Gentile or a tax collector. Most certainly I tell you, whatever things you bind on earth will have been bound in heaven, and whatever things you release on earth will have been released in heaven. Again, assuredly, I tell you, that if two of you will agree on earth concerning anything that they will ask, it will be done for them by my Father who is in heaven. For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there I am in their midst. Then Peter came and said to him, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me, and I forgive him? Until seven times? Yeshua said to him, I don't tell you until seven times, but until 70 times 7. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to reconcile accounts. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to reconcile accounts with his servants. When he had begun to reconcile, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. But because he couldn't pay, his master commanded him to be sold, with his wife, his children, and all that he had, and payment to be made. The servant therefore fell down and kneeled before him, saying, Lord, have patience with me, and I will repay you all. The master of that servant, being moved with compassion, released him and forgave him the debt. When he had begun to reconcile, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. But because he couldn't pay, his master commanded him to be sold, with his wife, his children, and all that he had, and payment to be made. The servant, therefore, fell down and kneeled before him, saying, Lord, have patience with me, and I will repay you all. The master of that servant, being moved with compassion, released him and forgave him the debt. But that servant went out and found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. And he grabbed him and took him by the throat, saying, Pay me what you owe. So his fellow servant fell down at his feet and begged him, saying, Have patience with me, and I will repay you. He would not, but went and cast him into prison until he should pay back that which was due. So when his fellow servants saw what was done, they were exceedingly sorry, and came and told to their master all that was done. Then his master called him in and said to him, You wicked servant! I forgave you all that debt because you begged me. Shouldn't you also have had mercy on your fellow servant, even as I had mercy on you? His master was angry and delivered him to the tormentors until he should pay all that was due to him. So my heavenly Father will also do to you if you don't each forgive your brother from your hearts for his misdeeds. And now, here's some insight from Eliyahu ben David on that portion.
Shalom, friends. We're so glad to have you with us. Tonight, our theme is about precious little ones. And it kind of reminds me of a party. A bunch of kids getting together for a party. And isn't it a wonderful thing when that happens? The sounds of the children playing and giggling and having fun. And children are really such a blessing to all of us and help to kind of take the edge off the seriousness of the world. And we're also blessed by the children. Our Father loves the children. Yeshua said, It's not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. So we want to kind of focus on this tonight, as well as the other things that Yeshua had to say in Matthew chapter 18. And we're going to get right into that right now. Even so, it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. You know, when I read this verse, a thought struck me. You know, when you get to be my age, one of the unfortunate things about that is you've been to more funerals than you'd wanted to be at. And some of them, unfortunately, are children. Some of them are parents, but none of them are people that you want to see this happen to. Often what I see happen, though, at funerals, people are looking for answers. And somebody will say, well, God needed your little daughter in heaven, so he took her. And I think that's so different than what this verse says. The verse says that it's not the Father's will that one of these little ones should perish. It's not God that's taking anybody. Stop saying that to people. Stop thinking that. Our Father in heaven doesn't wish any of these little ones to perish. He doesn't wish you to perish. He doesn't wish the worst person out there to perish. It happens, though. If it's not because he wants it to happen, why? Why is it happening? Well, we have the story here about the sheep, 100 sheep. And we have a man. Who is the man in this parable? Is it not our Father in heaven? Isn't that what Messiah is trying to explain to us? He has 100 sheep. They're basically okay, if that's what it's saying. They're not going to perish right away, so what does he do? Well, he goes out and he seeks after the lost sheep, the ones that are on the wrong path, the ones that are headed towards destruction. And if he finds that sheep, he rejoices over it. If. It's a big if. Sin is in the world. It's been in the world for a long time now. Free will is in the world. It's complicated, isn't it? You know, our Creator, he created mankind perfect. He gave us free will. But he also gave us everything we needed in order to obey him, choose the right road, and make for a happy life for everybody. But we didn't do that. Our forefathers didn't do that. And it's a sticky problem. Because, you know, when the Father creates something, he doesn't just roll it up in a ball and throw it away. He had a purpose in mind. He gave people free will for a reason. He has a solution to sin. But unfortunately, it's going to take time, and it has taken time, to work out this problem. And through these ages, through all this time, a lot of little ones have been born. And some of them have done the best they can to choose the right way. Others, unfortunately, you could say the majority, have chosen their own selfish way, like our first parents. All of this has had a horrible impact in the world. Yes, there is death in the world. There's cancer. There's heart disease. There's murder, terrorism, war. All of this is because ultimately of people's choices. We need to understand that. And we need to understand that it really is not the will of our Father who is in heaven that these little ones should perish. You know, he rejoices when that one that's gone astray is found and comes home. And that's what I really think about with this. You know, I think there's so many who have gone astray. And perhaps you did at some point in your life. Perhaps I did at some point in my life. You know, when a person is in that condition where they have gone astray, many times they feel condemned in their heart. Many times they feel like God hates them. Like there really is no way back for them. You know, at a certain point in my life, my dad felt like that. And I was estranged from my dad. And because of things in his life, he had gone astray. And he had that feeling of condemnation. And when my Father in heaven poured out his grace into my life, one of the very first things I did is go to see my father. And I shared that grace with him. And he came to see that all the things that had happened in the past weren't really relevant. What is relevant is, what choice am I going to make right now? Am I going to turn around? Am I going to come home? My dad said to me, I don't really deserve it, but if it's being offered, I'm going to take it. And he did. He became a believer with a great faith. And it was the beginning not only of a new relationship for him with his Father in heaven through Messiah, but it was the beginning of a new relationship for he and I also. Our Father does not want us to be burdened down by the past, by guilt and insecurity. If we were wrong, we ought to say so, at least between him and ourselves. We need to do that so that we can identify what's wrong and we can turn around and change it, right? That's how to change things. And we need to look to him. But isn't it wonderful to know he doesn't want any of his little ones to perish? And that includes you. Now, if you're hearing this message right now, chances are you already know all this. But it's a good thing to think about. Because you know what? You might have people in your life, some of them children, some of them parents, other people, who could benefit from some of that grace coming through you into their life to help them to turn around and receive that grace from him. So that's just something that I was thinking about as I was reading this verse. Children, they're such a blessing. And you know, when you're young parents and you have young children, it seems like they're going to be with you forever. You know? And you can get sick of everything that goes along with that sometimes, and that's normal. You know, changing diapers and all the things that have to do with raising children. But, you know, it's such a blessing having children in your life. And so much depends on what happens between you and your children while they're with you. I think this chapter kind of calls out to all of us to think like Messiah thought and to realize that the children are so important to him, important enough to make sacrifices for them so that they can have the space they need to grow and thrive and to know the love of Yeshua Messiah.
Stay tuned. Eliyahu has more to share in the book of Matthew after this short break. Enjoying this episode of Hebraic Insights in the Gospels? Want to hear more teachings from Eliyahu ben David? Tune in to our 24/7 internet radio station, Zion Road Messianic Radio. You can catch the latest episodes of Hebraic Insights in the Gospels before they're released as a podcast, learn more about what Zion Ministry teaches from our other programs, and listen to a host of uplifting songs from our independent Messianic music artists. To tune in to our station, go to Zion.org, that's TSIYON.org, or search for Zion Road Messianic Radio. Again, that's Zion, spelled TSIYON, in your favorite internet radio app or station directory. Don't miss the latest episodes. Go to TSIYON.org and check the station schedule to see what's playing. Welcome back. Here's the next scripture portion. Matthew chapter 19, verse 1 through verse 12. It happened when Yeshua had finished these words. He departed from Galilee and came into the borders of Judea beyond the Jordan. Great multitudes followed him, and he healed them there. Pharisees came to him, testing him, and saying, "Is it legal for a man to divorce his wife for any reason?" He answered, "Haven't you read that he who made them from the beginning made them male and female? And said, 'For this cause a man shall leave his father and his mother and shall join to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh?' So they are no more two, but one flesh. What therefore Elohim has joined together, don't let man tear apart." They asked him, "Why then did Moses command us to give her a bill of divorce and divorce her?" He said to them, "Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, allowed you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it has not been so. I tell you that whoever divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another commits adultery, and he who marries her, when she is divorced, commits adultery." His disciples said to him, "If this is the case of the man with his wife, it is not expedient to marry." But he said to them, "Not all men can receive this saying, but those to whom it is given. For there are eunuchs who were born that way from their mother's womb, and there are eunuchs who were made eunuchs by men, and there are eunuchs who made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. He who is able to receive it, let him receive it." And now, here's Eliyahu ben David's insight on those verses.
Well, now, after all of that wonderful stuff, we're going to talk about something that's really difficult. You know, talking about relationship problems, well, here we go. Grounds for divorce. You know, just hearing the word is disturbing. Just the word itself. And unfortunately, in this world, many of us have experienced divorce. And many times people can work things out so that divorce doesn't happen. But, you know, sometimes that can't happen. Sometimes one or more of the parties is not willing. Now, a whole lot of different things can happen so that divorce, there's nothing you personally can do to stop it. And that may have happened with some of us. Well, what do the scriptures have to say about divorce? When is it appropriate for a person to actually consider divorce? Well, tonight we don't have that entire answer in view. We're going to be looking at what Yeshua said about it, specifically in Matthew 19. So let's just go through here. And I'm bringing this in, I'm going into this next chapter, because this fits with what we've been talking about. What we've been talking about is relationship issues. And so this part about divorce really fits with this theme. So that's why I'm continuing this here. It says, it happened when Yeshua had finished these words, he departed from Galilee and came into the borders of Judea beyond the Jordan. Great multitudes followed him, and he healed them there. Pharisees came to him, testing him and saying, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason? Now, usually when people read this in our modern age, they're thinking, well, it says man, but it could just as well mean woman. And if you make that assumption, you'd be wrong. Because in the scriptures, specifically in this Hebraic society in which this question came up and was being answered from the book of Deuteronomy, the marriage arrangement among the Hebrews was very much regulated according to the behavior of the woman. It was a monandric society, and the covenant actually revolved around the woman. And the men and the women had different responsibilities under the covenant because they were different and they had a different role. And so it's not just the egalitarian kind of thinking like we have in modern times that you're looking at when you look at this. Also, when it's talking about divorce, what are you thinking? You're thinking going down to the courthouse, right? And getting a divorce at the courthouse. Well, that's not what this is about. It's an entirely different kind of divorce in the scriptures from what it is at the courthouse. So you have to keep that in mind. As you're looking at this, you have to think of the context within that Hebraic society. So these rules that we're talking about here are specifically about a man divorcing his wife. And actually, the scriptures don't even use the term of a wife divorcing her husband. You know, like for instance, in our society, we use the word either way, whether it's the man that's getting the divorce, the woman that's getting the divorce, divorce is divorce. It's not that way in the scriptures. It doesn't even use the word of a woman divorcing her husband. It's a woman being free of her husband. So it's just a different way of thinking, and we can't explain all that with these verses here. However, I just want to say there are further protections for women in the Torah that men don't get. Now, isn't that interesting? Yahweh had special protection for his daughters in the marriage relationship. And you can see a link here. This is where I've written quite a bit more about marriage as it is in the Torah. So I would just refer you to that for a much wider scope on this whole issue. Well, having said that, let's move along. So the question is that the Pharisees had, And it says they were testing him. Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason? Well, this was a real test because there were basically two camps among the Pharisees. There were those who said this, that it was lawful. In fact, if your wife burned the soup, they said you could divorce her for that. But then there were others that said no, that divorce was much more limited than that. So they thought maybe they would be able to catch him in this kind of controversy that was going on at that time. And this question is specifically about the divorce rules for men found in Deuteronomy 24, 1 and 2. Now, we're going to look into those specific verses, but first we want to see how Messiah answered this question. Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason? He answered, "Haven't you read that he who made them from the beginning made them male and female?" That's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, as we've often heard. "And said, for this cause a man shall leave his father and mother and shall join to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." So that they're no more two, but one flesh. "What therefore God has joined together, don't let man tear apart." So the whole point here is that in perfection, divorce was never intended. Let's pause and look at some of the differences of marriage in perfection, okay? We're talking here about a joining between a man and a woman. We're talking about also God joining them together. And isn't that what happened in the garden? Yahweh actually created the woman for the man, and he personally brought the woman to the man. So when Messiah is saying, what God has joined together, let no man tear apart, he's referring to that. And while that kind of marriage happens for the people of Yahweh who want it to happen, for a lot of people, that doesn't happen because they preclude it from happening. They choose on the grounds of criteria that suit them. How tall a guy is, how good looking a girl is, whatever, right? And they marry for reasons that have nothing to do with what God has joined together. So, very often, marriage in this world is really different than it was in the garden. And very much falling short of that standard. Well, with Yeshua pointing to perfection, then they said, why then did Moses command us to give her a bill of divorce and divorce her? If divorce was never intended, how come it's in the Torah? Well, they thought they had him there, right? And here, when they mention a bill of divorce, there's just one place it talks about that, and that's in Deuteronomy 24. So we know that's what they're talking about. And this is Messiah's answer. Moses, because of the hardness of your hearts, allowed you to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it has not been so. Hardness of your heart. Sounds like a lack of love, doesn't it? And, of course, that's because of sin. Sin was not intended, so divorce was not intended. But sin has come into the world. And people then bring sin into their marriage. And when it's severe enough, divorce is inevitable. So the divorce law in the Torah and many other of the commandments were given to cope with the problem of sin. Should we just pretend that we live in a perfect world? How well are you going to do if you live like a person in the perfect world in this world? Don't you need some guidelines when people don't act perfect, or even when you don't act perfect? So the truth is, we need this. We need this divorce law. We need all the rest of the commandments, because sin is in the world and we have to deal with it. That's the fact. And that's the reality. That's the practicality that Messiah is pointing to here and saying, this is why Moses gave this to us. Because sin is in the world, because of the hardness of our hearts. Well, then we have this verse. I tell you that whoever divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another, commits adultery. And he who marries her when she is divorced commits adultery. Now, this is the divorce verse. And in many churches, they take great pride in torturing people with this verse. I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'm going to tell you what this verse actually says. He who marries her when she is divorced commits adultery. This phrase is not in all the manuscripts, and it is likely a spurious verse. Now, that word spurious means a verse that is put in later by people that didn't like the verse the way it was. For that reason, some Bibles do not include this phrase in the verse. For example, the New American Standard Bible says this: I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another commits adultery. And it stops there and it leaves out that other part. The Jewish New Testament does the same thing. So there are other Bibles as well where the Bible translators realize that phrase is spurious and was inserted later. Now, why would that happen? Have you read anything about church history? Where did this crazy idea of celibacy for priests come from? The early Gentile Christians were totally warped in their thinking about marriage. So if there's a verse they were going to mess with, this would be the one. Now, while we're on that, we have this other phrase, and marries another. I tell you that whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery. In the New American Standard Bible, it has this footnote. Some early manuscripts read, makes her commit adultery. Well, if what is happening here is Messiah is explaining Deuteronomy 24, 1 and 2, that's what makes sense. He makes her commit adultery. He's forcing her out of his house when she doesn't deserve that to happen. And the Torah does not expect her to survive on her own. In fact, in that society, that's next to impossible. So he's putting her in a position where she is going to have to be with another man. He's causing her or making her commit adultery. That's the real thing that Messiah said. But he also did say this, I tell you that whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality. Basically, he's saying in the verses here, in Deuteronomy 24, 1 and 2, it gives the grounds on which the man can divorce his wife, and those grounds are sexual immorality. And if he divorces her for other reasons, he's making her commit adultery because he's putting her in a position where she is going to go and be another man's. And this requirement has not actually happened. Let's look at the verse itself. Deuteronomy 24, 1 and 2. When a man takes a woman to husband her, then it shall be, if she find no favor in his eyes, because he has found some unseemly thing in her, that he shall write her a bill of divorce and give it in her hand, and send her out of his house. When she is departed out of his house, she may go and be another man's wife. Now, where does the court fit into that? I don't say anything about a court there. She may end up taking it to court, okay? If she feels this is a wrongful divorce, she can take it to the court. But it doesn't start there. Marriage matters are really between the parties. And only where there's a dispute they can't settle does it then go beyond that to the court. That's how it works in the Torah. So anyway, what it's saying here, he takes her to be her husband. Now, I put it that way here. It says when a man marries a woman, but that's not what it actually says in the Hebrew. It says when a man takes a woman to husband her. In other words, he is accepting the responsibilities of a husband under the Torah towards her. And therefore, in the covenant, he has certain requirements now towards her. And that's really a part of that. And then she finds no favor in his eyes. Now, if it stopped there, you just think he didn't like her because she burned the soup or whatever. But it goes on and it says, because he has found some unseemly thing in her. So there's cause here, an unseemly thing. Well, what is that? We're going to get to that in a minute. If that happens, then he could write her out a bill of divorce and give it to her and send her away, and their marriage would be terminated. And after that, it says, she may go and be another man's wife. Now, this assumes that she actually has done something unseemly, right? She was guilty of that. Now she has been divorced, and she's getting remarried. And she's allowed to do it. It says she may do it. It says she may remarry. Why do I point out all this? Because this is totally contrary to the teachings of many churches. There are many Christian women that have remained single through their lives because their church has told them, since their husband has divorced them, they cannot remarry. And they are actually making the word of God void because of their traditions. Moving on. Does some unseemly thing mean for any reason? Or does it mean a specific reason? It's a specific word. The word translated unseemly thing here from the Hebrew. And it's Strong's number 6172. Here it is. Irva. And it specifically means nudity. But it has the connotation of unclean things connected with nudity, unclean things people do when they're naked. The word means nakedness. So urva is not just any annoyance the husband may have regarding his wife. It has to do with unclean behavior involving nakedness. Now, this is biblical language. Leviticus chapter 18. The entire chapter is talking about things having to do with uncovering nakedness. And it uses that term as a euphemism for all different kinds of wrongful sexual behavior. And it lists there all kinds of disgusting things that the nations do, things that believers are not to do, that Yahweh's people are not to do. And so this word is specifically referring to Leviticus 18 and the behaviors there. So these are the unseemly things that are the lawful grounds for divorce. So therefore, we see that in a perfect world, people would never practice any of these sexual sins, so there would be no need for a man to ever divorce his wife. However, in this world, some people do practice these things, so therefore, Yahweh responded to that with a righteous law for divorce. Well, Messiah says the lawful ground is sexual immorality. Now, this is from the Greek text, and it's from the Greek word porneia. And the word porneia does not just mean fornication or, adultery in the modern sense. You know, if you look up adultery in the English dictionary, it has a certain definition that's very specific. But this word sexual immorality has a wider scope. And the word porneia means illicit sexual intercourse, adultery, fornication, homosexuality, lesbianism, intercourse with animals, etc. The list goes on, and thank goodness we don't have to read it all. But it's interesting in this definition from Thayer, it specifically refers to Leviticus 18. The word porneia, as used in the Greek scriptures, specifically refers to these things in Leviticus 18. So what do we see from this when we look at the verse and we look at what Messiah said about the verse? Moses and Messiah completely agree on the verse. Why the Pharisees had trouble with it had nothing to do with what the verse actually said. Well, when his disciples heard this, they said this to him: "If this is the case of the man with his wife, it is not expedient to marry." In other words, if once you marry her, you're stuck with her. No matter what she does and how you feel about it, you're better off not to get married in the first place. And do you know that today in the modern era, there is a whole movement of men that feel like this? And this is specifically because of the feminist movement. They think it's a bad deal for a man to get married because he's probably going to end up losing his house, losing his wealth, whatever it is, losing his children, probably going to happen. And so a lot of men think that's a bad deal, and they've decided they don't want to marry. Well, here's what Messiah said to answer their question. Not all men can receive this saying, but those to whom it is given. That is the saying, it's not expedient to marry. It's only for those to whom it is given. And then he says, there are eunuchs who were born that way from their mother's womb. There are eunuchs who were made eunuchs by men, and there are eunuchs who made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. So, to Messiah, not taking a wife is the same as being a eunuch. In other words, not having sexual relations. That's very different from the thinking of the men I was talking about, because they're not saying not having sexual relations, they're just saying not committing to marriage. So, from a scriptural standpoint, they're still open to living a life in sin. However, he knew his disciples were under the Torah. So when they said, not marry, they meant to be celibate. And he's saying that there are some men who are born eunuchs from their mother's womb. In other words, it just happens in their case, for whatever reason, either they can't or don't have an interest in the opposite sex. And we know that's a fact with some folks. And then there are eunuchs who were made eunuchs by men. And, you know, this happened a lot in ancient times, that certain men were actually made eunuchs, and then they could be trusted around women. This was the thinking, and they would make them as servants. As a matter of fact, there were some of the early church fathers that actually castrated themselves because they had sexual feelings towards women, and they felt that by castrating themselves, they were somehow gaining God's favor, which maiming yourself is not really something he wants you to do. In fact, that's against the Torah. But then it says there are eunuchs who made themselves eunuchs for the kingdom of heaven's sake. What does that mean? Well, there are people who are dedicated to Yahweh, who have this gift given to them. As it said earlier, those to whom it is given, to be celibate, to be single. Note that this is not the normal state. Note that Yahweh created men and women from the beginning to be married, and that is what the normal state is, and all the feelings that go with that, that's all part of the normal state. So it's a gift that is given to some men. This is talking about men here, for the sake of the kingdom, for them to be free of marriage. And we know, for example, the Apostle Paul was such a person. And I think that was probably a kindness to any woman that might have been his wife. Because look at the things that he did. It was very, very rigorous. His life was very rigorous. And so Yahweh had given him that gift. All indications are that when Messiah was on the earth, he had this gift. Because we don't really see anything in the scriptures that talk about him being married. So, in that sense, he's probably talking about himself here as an example. But then he says, he who is able to receive it, let him receive it. In other words, if you have this gift, then you can receive this, that it's not expedient to marry. But if you don't have that gift, you're probably just setting yourself up for disaster if you decide you're not going to marry, but you don't have the gift. And for proof of that, all I have to say is Catholic priests. Right? We know what that's all about. So, these are the words of Yeshua Messiah about the book of Deuteronomy and what the Torah says regarding the grounds on which a man can divorce his wife. And as I mentioned earlier, I showed a link where I have a lot more information that contains a lot about the other side of the story, about women in marriage and divorce. And so if you want more information, you can go there. So that concludes our discussion on grounds for divorce from Matthew 19, 1 through 12, and our discussion of people problems this evening.
You have been listening to Hebraic Insights in the Gospels. The link Eliyahu mentioned, where Eliyahu goes into this topic of divorce in more detail, can be found by logging in to Zion.net and visiting Zion.net/Torah-divorce. Eliyahu also discussed Torah marriage in various programs, including his Eliyahu ben David Bet Midrash program on Leviticus 18. Further teachings and study materials on various related topics and others can be found at our membership site, Zion Tabernacle. Sign up is free. Just go to Zion.net. That's TSIYON.NET. Or click the membership link on the Zion Road website. New programs on the Gospels will be airing every Sabbath on Zion Road Radio. Join us next Shabbat to learn more in the book of Matthew. Shabbat Shalom! Find a rest for your soul.